All right, so we are holding on Gimel Omud Beis, a bit past the middle of the Omud line, again, below Yidam. Okay, so we're in the middle of working like this. Our Mishnah had started by saying Hakol Ma'arichin B'nei Arachin, which led us into a sugya on various other places in Shas where it says Hakol can do or Hakol are required to do such and such, and the question is each time what the Hakol comes to include. And then we started with, you have specifically by a number of things. It says in Mishnah, so Brais, if Hakol Chayovin in this mitzvah, Koinim Levim B'Yisraelim. And the question is, why does it spell out that Koinim Levim B'Yisraelim Achayim? So we had a couple of them already. The next one.
We answered, by the way, about Koinim. We don't know still.
No, once it says Koinim, of course, it has to mention the others. It can't very well say that only Koinim Achayim, right? Once it says Koinim, then automatically it means that you have to mention Levim B'Yisraelim as well. So the next one, Hakol Chayovin B'Tefillin Koinim Levim B'Yisraelim. A Brais says, everybody's Chayim B'Tefillin. So the question is, Pshita, isn't that obvious? And the answer is, again, Koinim is strictly, the Chiddush is about the Koinim. And again, once it says it about the Koinim, then already it has to mention the other ones as well. Why is it a Chiddush that Koinim have to wear Tefillin? You would think like this. The Pasuk mentions that you have to wear Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh. So you would think like this. Kol de'iseh mitzvah de'yad, iseh b'mitzvah de'rosh. Anybody who's obligated in the mitzvah of Tefillin Shel Yad is the one who's chayiv in the mitzvah of Tefillin Shel Rosh. Bahani koyanim, now when it comes to koyanim, hoyo v'lesnehu b'mitzvah de'yad, since at certain times, at any rate, they do not have the mitzvah of Tefillin Shel Yad, namely when they're doing the avodah and wearing the big day kohona, and we know they can't
keep it the rush.
So dechtiv, and we know that because the pasuk says that he has to wear the big day kohona yilbash al besorah. He has to wear them on his flesh, implying shaloyah hedava chotzes beino vein besorah. There's not allowed to be any katzitza between the clothing and his flesh, so he can't put Tefillin Shel Yad on while he's wearing the big kohuna and doing the avodah, because it would be a chatzitza. And you can't... Fine, but there's space below the turban, as we're going to see in a minute. But there's no space in the sleeve. There's no space in the sleeves of the chumash. And he can't put the tefillin on over the sleeve either, because vice versa. You can't have a chatzitza between the tefillin Shel Yad and your hand either. And your arm either. So therefore, given that they don't do that, you would think maybe they're not chayiv in Tefillin Shel Rosh as well. Therefore, the Braisa is telling us they're still chayiv, because the fact is, Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh are not ma'akiv one another. It is true that when you're wearing both of them, we learned in Menachos, that you have to that whenever you have the Tefillin Shel Rosh on, you also have to have the Tefillin Shel Yad on, which is why we put on the Shel Yad first and take it off last. But when you only have the one, the fact is, you only do the one, and you go to that mitzvah. There are actually two separate mitzvahs in the 613 mitzvahs.
When you put the Shel Rosh, you have to put the Shel Yad on.
You already have the Shel Yad on, but that's if you're going to be wearing both. Because it's first it says, because it says, v'ho'yu, l'chaitofis, b'nenecha, v'ho'yu is plural, meaning that when the chaitofis are b'nenecha, there has to be a plural, there has to be the Yad on at the same time. We lived in Menachos, and in the third parak of Menachos, when we have the whole sugya about films. But the point is, in other words, but the fact is, they're not ma'akiv one another. If you only have a Shel Yad, you can only put on the Shel Yad for whatever reason, then you only do that. If you only have the Shel Rosh and you can only put it on, then that's the only one you do. And you go to that mitzvah. They're two separate mitzvahs. So that's the point. The Braisa wants to tell us is that the Koyanim are still chayiv in tefillin even when they're doing the avodah. Okay, the Rambam actually phrased it a little bit differently. The Rambam says they're not required to wear tefillin, but if they want to wear Shel Rosh during the avodah, because the pashtus, the Rambam would understand, the same way as nowadays, we're not required to wear tefillin all day long. We put it on during Shacharis, and that's enough. But in those times, the minhag was that generally people wore it all day. So I guess the Rambam would learn, fine, of course, a Kohen, if he has time during the day when he's not otherwise occupied with the avodah, then he has to put on both. But let's say we're talking about from morning until evening, he's working on the avodah, and he has no time for anything else. So fine, then in that case, but the only one he's going to be able to wear is the Shel Rosh. Then, of course, yeah, he'd be obligated in the Shel Rosh because there's no other choice. But the point is, if he wears both of them, if he puts them both on in the morning, and then later on in the day he's going to be doing the avodah, so he takes off the Shel Yad, fine, he could take off the Shel Rosh at that point if he wants to, but he could keep it on if he wants to, as people used to do. So that's the point. By the way, there are in Sefer Eshkol, it mentions that there were some of the Gaonim who wanted to learn on the basis of this Gemara that even nowadays, Gaonim should be possible from Tefillin Shel Yad. However, that's not the halacha. Because they learned the Gemara when it says over here that Gaonim left in the mitzvah of the Yad, they understood it to mean that Gaonim are not chayiv and Tefillin Shel Yad at all. But that's not the halacha. The Sefer Eshkol says that's not the halacha, and indeed it's not. Gaonim are chayiv and Tefillin Shel Yad. Okay. So the question is, Kiddush not, as in fact we learn in the Mishnah, they're not ma'ak of one another, as in fact we learn in the Mishnah and the Nachas. Tefillin shor yad, ein ma'ak tebis shor rosh, for shor rosh, ein ma'ak tebis shor yad. That the tefillin shor yad and shor rosh are not ma'ak of one another. Okay. So the question is...
The order is
ma'ak, right. But if you're wearing only one, then... So the question is, ma'ishna de yad, so why are we saying that Kohenim are not able to wear the tefillin shor yad, and the reason is, again, because they have to wear the big kahuna directly on their skin, and the tefillin would be a chatzitza. In that case, as you just said, wouldn't there be the same problem? Rosh nami, wouldn't there be the same problem with the shor rosh? The pasuk also says that they have to wear the mitznefes directly on their head, so the tefillin would be a chatzitza. The answer is, tana, we learn in a braisa in connection with the Kohen Gadol, his hair was visible between the tzitz, which he wore on his forehead, and the mitznefes, which he wore on his head, shesham maniach tefillin. In that space between them, he was able to wear tefillin shor rosh. So the kohenim had yotim, all the more so. They're not even wearing the tzitz. So therefore, they have more room available. They have more space available. And in fact, for that reason, the Poshim said, that's one reason why the kohenims and the kohen gadol and the kohen hedyot, they both are wearing headgear and it's both wrapped around their head in a similar way, like a turban, but the kohen gadol is called mitznefes and the kohen hedyot is called mikvah. One explanation, as Rashi mentions it on the Sukkim, is that the mitznefes had to be wound around the left of his head because he needs more of his head available for the trillin because he has the tzitz and the trillin and then the mitznefes, whereas the kohenim and yotim wouldn't have the tzitz. They had more room, so therefore the mikvah could cover more of their head.
If by accident the tefillin and the shorosh comes underneath nefesh, is it a chatzitza?
Yeah, it would be a chatzitza.
It is.
Yeah. So you have a din in Shulchan Aruch, for example, let's say if a person, let's say, for example, has a head wound, so they have a bandage on, or let's say, for example, yeah, then that's different than they're allowed to. Or for another example, actually, it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, let's say a person is cold, and he has to keep his head covered. So yeah, he can wear like a light head covering or whatever. Okay. Anyway, the point is that the mikvah wouldn't be a chitza for the tefillin because he could wind it higher up on his head. Whereas with the ksonis and its sleeves, you don't have any such thing. Okay. Fine. So that's why the Braita says that kohenim have to wear ksonis. Okay.
If you put a hole in it, so.
No, because you can't have holes in the kohenim. Okay. Next, hakol chayavim b'tkiyas shofar kohenim levim yisraelim. Another Braita says that everybody is chayav in b'tkiyas shofar kohenim levim yisraelim. So again, the question is pshita. And again, the answer is kohenim is tzrichalei. The chiddush, again, is that it's kohenim who are chayav. Women, no, locked off. But women are not really chayav in tefillin shor rosh because the mitzvah says hashem not grah. Yeah, so when
I
what about it? About you? Okay, kol means all men. We know a general rule. Mitzvah says hashem not grah. Usually women are potter. There are certain exceptions. Megillah that I talked about yesterday being one of them because after hoyu lo yisan neses as the gemara said over there. But in general, women are potter from mitzvah says hashem not grah. So when we say kohenim akol chayav mekias shofar kohenim levim yisraelim, so kohenim pshita. The answer is kohenim tzrichalei. The chiddush is that kohenim are required to hear mekias shofar. Why? Stuck that for a minute, because you would think otherwise. Like this, toil of siv yom trua yilafem, because the pasuk says it should be a day of blowing for you. He would argue like this, man delesse elabit kia dechad yoma, only somebody who, the only kia that they're obligated to have on any given day is one day of the year, on Rosh Hashanah, because remember, Rosh Hashanah is only one day, it's only because they weren't sure always when Kiddush HaKodesh is, that you often have to. But the whole reason why you have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is because you could have sometimes there was the takana that if Adim comes after the time of Mincha, then you're going to say in Kodesh Olamacha Kodesh, in further away places they wouldn't even know when Basin was Mechadish the Kodesh. But in principle, if everybody, like for example, in principle, when the Jewish people were in the Midbar and everybody's within a couple of miles of each other and communication is easy, and Adim would come before Mincha, then yeah, they'd only have 1 day of Rosh Hashanah. In Yerushalayim, sometimes they'd have 1 day and sometimes 2 days. So you would think only... So you would think only somebody who's obligated in Tias Shofar only once a year, Chayev, he's the one who's obligated in listening to it on Rosh Hashanah. Bahani Kohenim, now when it comes to Kohenim, Hoyo v'isnu v'tkiyat kol eshata, they have Tias all year, that they hear all year, or that they do all year round. Dichtiv, this week's parasha, it says they should blow the trumpet whenever you bring a korban ola and whenever you bring a certain korban. I don't think I'm going to ask that. Therefore, aim a loyal chayvu. So you would argue since they have a mitzvah of kia all year round, so maybe they're not chayvu in kia shofar. So therefore, that would be what the braita is saying. The question, though, is, if you just said, mi-jomi, how do you compare? Hosom chatsotias, hachal shofar. Fine, it's the same kind of sound, because both are tkiah, but one is tkiah, true of tkiah, fine, but one of them is shofar, one of them is chatsotias. So what's the hava? Well, I mean, it sounds different, of course, because blowing the silver trumpet, but yeah, it's the same kind of, same thing, long and short, and yeah. So, the answer is itzrich, still, okay, there's a different reason why there's a chiddush that koinim are chayim and kiyas shofar. Because you can think, there's another way we could look at it. You would think like this. Hoyel utznan, now we learn in a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, shava hayoyvel a Rosh Hashanah l'tkiyah v'lebrachos, that yoyvel and Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur of yoyvel is the same as Rosh Hashanah as far as tkiyah. Both of them you blow shofar the same way. In fact,
No.
The Yovel year begins on Rosh Hashanah, of course, but the official beginning of the Yovel year is actually on Yom Kippur, because on Yom Kippur is when they blow shofar, and that is when the mitzvahs of Yovel come into effect. That is when all the avodim ivriim go home. That's when all the fields and whatnot get returned to their owners. So in that sense, Yom Kippur. In fact, we're going to learn about that. We're going to learn about that on Daf Yud Aleph Yud Beis, Baruch Hashem, about that. Daf Yud Beis. We're going to talk about the fact that in effect the Rosh Hashanah of Yovel takes place on Yom Kippur. You have a Rosh Hashanah that year. You have a regular Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah, but you also have Yovel of Yom Kippur of that year is a little bit like Rosh Hashanah in the sense you blow shofar then in the same way as you do on Rosh Hashanah. And in fact, we learn in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, it says that we learn a number of the dinim. We learn certain details of the dinim of tkiyas shofar from the way it says it by Yovel and vice versa. So it's the same as far as tkiyah. You have to blow the same number of sounds, v'lebrachos, and also as far as the brachos of Musaf, the same way as on Rosh Hashanah, we say, instead of one middle bracha, like most Shabbos and Yom Tov Musaf, we say three middle brachas. Malchus is the furnace of shofars. The same way on Yom Kippur of Yovel, you do the same thing. So given that equation between Rosh Hashanah of every year and Yom Kippur of Yovel, he would argue like this. The Isay, the mitzvah of Yovel, only somebody who has the mitzvah of Yovel in the fullest sense, Isay, the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, only he would have the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, so he's a shofar. The Lesay, the mitzvah of Yovel, Lesay, the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, somebody who does not have the full dinim of Yovel does not necessarily have the full dinim of Rosh Hashanah. One that we have to figure. Bahani Kahani. Now, when it comes to the Koyanim, and actually the Rosh points out, it's not only the Koyanim, the Levi'im as well. So here, the Chiddush is here, unlike the other ones, the Chiddush is not only Koyanim, the Chiddush is Koyanim and Levi'im are Chayev. So Koyanim and Levi'im, Hoyu v'lesnehu b'mitzvah to Yovel, in a certain sense, they do not have the mitzvah of Yovel. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah at the end of Arm Sechta, we're going to talk about the dinim of Yovel as they relate to private people's sales. We're first going to talk about Yovel as it relates to Hekdesh. That's why it belongs in our Masechta. But then after that, it starts talking about, towards the end of the Masechta, it talks about Yovel as it applies to private sales. Now, there's a number of dinim that relate to Yovel that work differently for Koyanim and Levi'im versus for Yisrael. One difference, the Rashi says one difference is, let's say a person wants to sell their field during Yovel itself. A Yisrael would not be able to do that. Rashi over here learns.
Just one day?
No, it's 1 year. 1 year.
1 year.
It's 1 year. It begins Rosh Hashanah and ends the next year out of Rosh Hashanah. So according to Rashi is saying over here that, which we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta, that if a Yisrael sells his field during Yovel year itself, then the sale doesn't take effect. On the other hand, Rashi over here says that Koyanim and Levi'im would be able to do that. They would sell it. It immediately goes back to them because it's doing Yovel year, and they get to keep the money. That's what Rashi says. Mechura v'yosa. It's a valid sale, but it goes back to them. But and they get to keep the money because the other guy knew that it's Yovel. The other guy knew that it's Yovel. So with the Yisrael, the sale doesn't make effect.
They keep the property and the money.
Apparently. Now, Tosfos actually disagrees with that. Tosfos says that the whole reason why a sale during Yovel doesn't take place is because if fields that have already been sold return to their owners, what's the logic that a field that hasn't been sold should be able to leave the owner's possession even for a moment? So that would apply equally well to a Koyan. Okay, for that and a number of other reasons, Tosfos disagrees with Rashi's explanation of Mocha and La'olam. And he says what it means is, among other things, it means that a Yisrael would not be able to, a Yisrael is not allowed to sell his field within a certain amount of time before Yovel, as we're going to talk about at the end of the Masechta. where the koy or also to be makdish. There's different gears over here from makdish in the olam. So therefore, so whereas koyim and levim have no such prescription, they could do it even right. They could sell it or right a few like a year or two before yovel. So it's a Yisrael, or it's a Hekdash, it's a safe maybe. A Yisrael wouldn't be able to do that, right?
Cannot sell,
I don't know about sell, actually, we'll talk about later, but can't be Makdish in particular. A Yisrael cannot be Makdish, a field, less than 2 years before Yovel. So on the other hand, Koyanim and Levim have no such restrictions, they can do it yet. So that's what it means, Mothram Olam, but Goyim Olam. And also, another rule is that a Yisrael, when he sells fields, has to wait at least 2 years before he can buy it back. Now, in and of itself, that has nothing to do with Yovel itself, but it has to do with the general complex of Halachos that has to do with Yovel. According to Tosfos, it has more directly to do, in the sense that if a Yisrael is Makdish his field, he has to wait at least a year after Yovel to buy it back for Makdish, where Koyanim have no such restrictions, because we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta that in general, a Yisrael is Makdish his field, for example, he might lose it forever if he doesn't buy it back from Yovel, if he doesn't buy it back from Hekdish before Yovel. Koyanim and Levim don't have that. Their property can never be alienated. Yeah, because the idea is because this is their only property in Eretz Yisrael, the Olam Mikvah. So but that's how it is. You're not fair. I mean, that's what the Torah says.
It's only in Eretz
Yisrael. Oh no, I mean this is the property that the Koyanim and Levim have. It's basically in
Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, so we'll learn about that. We'll learn about that at the end of the session. So we'll talk about those again. But anyway, the bottom line is that's how it is. That Eretz Yisrael has certain restrictions when he can buy, when he can sell, and when he can be makdish and when he can buy back makdish. Koyanim and Levim have no such restrictions. Therefore, so in other words, in a certain sense, they don't have the full dinim of Yovel. Eima b'mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah nami lo l'chayvu. So you would think that maybe they're not chayev in the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah. Kamash malon. Therefore, the Braisa tells us otherwise. Now, why indeed are they? Why taka don't we say if they're potter from certain dinim of Yovel, they should be potter from the dinim of Rosh Hashanah? Because you can say like this. It is true that they don't have the mitzvah of all the mitzvahs of Ashmatas Karka of returning fields, because again, certain of these dinim don't apply to them, or at least not in the same way as they apply to Yisraelim. On the other hand, the dinim of Shmitas Ksofim, where you have to forgive loans, unless you make a prosbul, and the dinim of sending away the rabbim ivriim, those apply equally well to Koyanim and Levim and Yisraelim. So therefore, they do have the mitzvahs of Yovel. They don't have the full complex of the mitzvahs of Yovel, but they have some of them.
So it's only land.
Actually, Tosfos talks to the Tosfos asks over here, what do you mean? What does Hashmatas Ksofim have anything to do with Yovel? Hashmatas Ksofim takes place in Shmita, not Yovel. Okay, but one explanation is. Well, yeah, that's how it is. But the answer is, Tosfos says, because the fact of the matter is, Midaraisa Shvius is Noeg only when the Yovel is Noeg. So in other words, again, they're connected. The whole concept, the Gemara discusses, Midaraisa only when Yovel is Noeg. It's actually a Machlokas in the Gemara, and it's a Machlokas Apostim as well, where the Shemitah nowadays is Midaraisa or Dirabonim. But there's no Yovel, from when the Esau Tashvat and when it goes. And there's no more Yovel. So according to that way of looking at it, Shemitah might only be Dirabonim from then on. But that's actually the Gemara discusses in Gittin, one possibility. How is Hillel able to make a Takana of Kruzbol, which in effect uproots the whole concept of Shemitah stop him? One answer is that Shemitah nowadays is only Dirabonim. Okay. Well, it kind of does, because not Yovel, but Shemitah, right? Because there's not enough Shemitah stop him, because once you have Kruzbol, then you're entitled to collect your debt. That's one answer. And the Gemara over there is Hefker based in Hefker. That because monetary matters, the Chachamim have more latitude, but the other answer is the Shmita nowadays is Rabban. Okay. Fine. Next. Everybody is chayiv in Mikra Megillah, Koyanim Levim Yisraelim. So again, the question is Pshita. And the answer is Loit Tzricha. Yes, but the Chiddush of the Braisa is not just that they're chayiv, but Libatol Avedosam. That it means, and here the Chiddush is actually on Koyanim and Levim and Yisraelim, that they actually have to be Mevatel, their Avodah, to go and hear Megillah. The Chiddush of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Like Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, the Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Koyanim Ba'avedosam, the Koyanim who are doing the Avodah in the Beis Mikdash, the Levim B'duchan, and the Levim who are on the Duchan singing and playing the instruments. One second. Yisroel b'ma'a modon, and Yisroel, when they're in their maimed, where you have the famous thing where you have certain, yeah, you have certain yeah, delegations from the other, from Yisrael, and who come to watch and observe the avodah. Because the point was that there should be representatives of the Jewish people there. Like Mara tells us, the Mishnah tells us in the Masechta Tainus, given that whenever a person brings a korban, they're supposed to be present. The Karbonis Tibur are brought on behalf of the whole Jewish people. So the Jewish people should be present. But not everybody can be, because people have jobs. So therefore, they have this concept of Maimed, where every week they had a delegation of Yisraelim, whose job it is to come and observe and watch the Avodah and be the representative. So there was never designated. Yeah. Okay, so all of them... What?
It was a big honor.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Mevatlin Avedosim, so all of them have to be Mevatl from their Avodah, or Roin Lashmoy and Vikram Megillah. They all have to come here Megillah. Yes, it's true, Megillah is the Rabbanon, but because of Pursumay Nisa, the Chachamim mandated it. So now, yeah, it is true, actually, you have a Machlokus among the Achroinim. What are we talking about, let's say, so what if we're talking about, let's say, so a Kohen is doing the Avodah the entire day, let's say there's no other Kohen available, should he still be Mevatl from it?
No.
Or yeah, there are. I think the Torah Evan wants to say that maybe yes. But yeah, that even then, the Chum still required it for Pesum and Nisa. But others say that not. But others say, because Pesum and Nisa is a very important thing. But others say that not. We're talking about where there's other Koyanim available. Okay, whatever. The point is that's the Chiddush, that they have to set aside their Avodah for. Next, Hakol Chayav and Mezimun. We say that everybody is Chayav in making a Mezuman, Koyan and Levim Yisraelim. So again, the question is Pshita. The answer is, again, the Chiddush is more on the Koyanim. Suppose that the Kohanim suppose that three Kohanim sat together and ate Kodshim. So what's the point? Sakudat Hamina, you would think like this. The Pasuk says when Kohanim eat Kodshim, but Oslu Oisan Ashakupa Behem Omarachmana, the Pasuk says that they should eat it because that's how Kapora is accomplished. Meaning, in other words, as the famous expression is, Kohanim Oichlin or Bailam Miskafim, that the Rashi brings it over here, the Kohanim eat and the owner, by the effect of their eating is that it completes the owner's Kapora. I mean, strictly speaking, I mean, the actual kapara we learned back in Zvachim is accomplished once the blood is reached on, once the blood reaches on the day. But there's a further degree of kapara that's accomplished by the Kohanim. Yeah? So therefore, the Vaha Kapara, you would argue, therefore, this is kapara, so maybe it's not considered a regular kind of eating. Maybe they shouldn't be chayav in Mezuman if they're eating together. Kamash Malan, no. Therefore, the Braitha tells us not, because after all, we're chalt of the Savata Amrachmana, because the Pasuk says you have to bench and that you have to make Mezuman, you eat and you're satisfied. Vaha Isnu, and they did eat and they were satisfied, so therefore they're so chayav in benching and in Mezuman.
And what do you think?
You would have thought that maybe their eating is not really considered eating because it's more of a kapara. Yeah.
And therefore they wouldn't have to bench.
So you would think maybe, or maybe if they have to bench, maybe they don't have to mezuman, but the answer is that they do. Interesting idea. The Meshech Chochma says on this, he says, the idea behind requiring mezuman, he says, is because you want to have people get together and bless Hashem especially before they bench, because let's say you could have a person eats, let's say, and they feel proud and they feel good about themselves and they may think of doing avodah. So you would think if they're eating kodshim, they're not going to be in that frame of mind. Nevertheless, the Torah says that even then, you know, unfortunately, it could happen to a person. No, but the point is, people are still human, and the fact is, your stomach is still full, and you're still liable to eat. Okay, fine.
And even crying.
Apparently, yeah. Similarly, Hakom, I mean, Reb Shamshon Afroel Hirsch has a different take on it. He says slightly different. He says the idea behind Zimun is like this: you're recognizing it's not a dog world. It's not like you have food because you took it from me. It's a zero-sum game or whatever. We recognize it all comes out from Hashem. So again, you would think that the Kohanim, would realize that when they're eating the Kodshim. But nevertheless, even they're still human beings, and they might still come to think that it's totally about Yom Yadi rather than Hashem.
And even then, they have a great solution.
Yeah, they do, because they have a greater potential. They have a greater potential for Kedusha, and you know, and his person has to actualize it, right? But the very fact that they have that greater potential, the fact that they have that greater potential means that they have it somewhere in there. They just don't know it yet. Okay, onward. Okay, Hakom is stifling the Zimun, Koyin and Levim Yisraelim. We say that everybody can combine together for a Zimun, Koyin and Levim Yisraelim. So again, Shita, why should they be able to? And the answer is Loitzricha. The Ka'achli Koyanim Truma or Kodshim. Suppose you have Koyanim eating Truma or Kodshim, the Zor Ka'ocho Cholin, and then you have a Zor sitting with them and eating Cholin. Now, Sakhdan Hamina. Why not?
They can be eating Truma.
they can be eating shurma.
At the same table?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so they have to put a separation between them like you do when people are eating milk and shurma. It's fine. Or maybe not, actually. Maybe you could say that Zorim know not to eat shurma. Whatever, we're not getting into that. The point is they could be in the same, they could be in the same, yeah. So the Zorim is sitting there and eating kol. So now you would think like this. If the Zor wanted to join in eating the Kohenim's food, he wouldn't be able to because it's Shulamor or Tzotchim, and it's also to him. So you would think, therefore, maybe the Zor and the Kohenim can't combine from the Zorman. Therefore, the Chiddush, because of the Braisa, and the reason why it works is Nehid Zor Bahadi Kohen Lemati Ochel. Granted, that the Zor is not able to eat the Kohen's food, but the reverse is not true. Kohen bahadi Zor mati ochel. The Kohen would be perfectly allowed to eat from the Zor's food. The Kohen's allowed to eat Kohen. What do you mean? Is the Kohen? No, even if it's Tomei, a Kohen's allowed to eat Tomei food. Midaraisa. Tomei food can't make a person Tomei anyway. It's only Midrabanan that it can. And fine, okay, so he'd become Tomei. Big deal. That's also true. Fine, okay, so he'll stop eating the Shulman and he'll start eating the Zor's food. The point is, so therefore they can combine together. Now, Tosfos points out over here briefly, and in brachas at greater length, Tosfos discusses, what about, let's say, for example, so first of all, we have a few possibilities we could talk about. What if you have a few people who are mudr hanam echaver? Let's say you have a few people who made a nether that they're not going to have hanam from each other. So now, it's bidirectional. Neither one can eat from each other's food. So just...
Both of them.
Yeah, I'm saying, so you have Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. Each one has made a neder, I'm not going to have anah from you. So then, on the face of it, based on this, they wouldn't be able to count. On the other hand, Tosfos says the difference. Tosfos over here just briefly says that the difference is, Truma is never going to be mutter to the Zor. If they were mutter anah, mechaberei, fine. In principle, they could be mutter neder, and the food would be mutter to each other. Okay, the Rebbe didn't say that Zor is not going to be Kohenim. In Kisrei HaRizal, it talks about the idea that the Levim will be Kohenim, but that doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, look, Torah is also a Hemocholephus. Torah doesn't change. What it explains, the Rebbe explains in the notes over there on Shur and Mosef HaTanya, that what it means is that nowadays, the people who have Meshomas that are more appropriate to Levim will at that time be born in the families of Kohenim. Because, yeah, but there's Kohen is Isha Chesed, Levim are more associated with Gvura. Yeah, so therefore, so nowadays, the people around the Gvura.
Levim may become Kohen.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you have different sources that suggest maybe Bechurim. All right, whatever. The point still remains, we're not talking about that. The Moshe Mashiach is a different matter. We're talking about nowadays. There's no way that Truma can be Mutter to a Zor. So therefore, so that's the difference, as opposed to, for example, when you have people who are mudr hanam echaver, they could be matir neder. So they could be matir neder. So therefore, there's more there. Therefore, there's reason to think therefore that they should be allowed to make a mizuman together. Okay, Tosfos discusses it briefly over here. Tosfos discusses it at more length in brachas. I'm looking at that Tosfos over here in brachas, but you have whatever. Over here, the choice was but whatever.
Which happened?
It's the Daf Yomi app I told you about before. Okay. Anyway, the point is that so on the other hand, there's also, for example, the question Tosfos also mentions over there. What if you have, for example, one person eating pasakum and the other two do not eat pasakum? Well, then, okay, it's not necessarily a bidirectional thing, because, again, he could eat from their bread. But you'll have also in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about, for example, a similar thing. What if some of them are eating milkers and some of them are eating fleshers? So then, well, no, forget about making a separation. The question is, can they combine together for a mezuman? So an argument can be made if one of them, for example, is eating milchik and the other two are eating tzlishik, conceivably they could combine, because after all, somebody who ate milchik is allowed to eat tzlishik. And, you know, we have a minute, but fine, you wait an hour, but in principle, he could. Our minute is an hour, but that's how people are. But in principle, as we don't control it, all you need to do is rinse out your mouth and rinse your hands, and then he could eat from their food. Okay, so there's a discussion, what about, for example, if he's eating hard cheese, where we have to wait 6 hours, so therefore, you have a bit more of an issue. So there are various issues with this when you have different people that may or may not eat from each other's food, and whether they can combine together for a meal. There's a dinim about it in Shulchan Aruch and Simchot Tzadik Vav. Okay. Onward. Next. Okay. Now getting back to the topic of our Masechta, Hakol Ma'arich and Kohen Levim Yisraelim, we say that everybody can bow an erech and pledge an erech to the Mishmetosh, Kohen Levim Yisraelim. So again, the question is pshita, isn't that obvious? And the answer is, Amar Rava, lo nitzrucha elo leben buchri, Rava, Shitim Kubata says, Rava, or Rava says, yes, but the chidush of our Mishnah is according to the opinion of Ben Buchri. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shkolim, we learned about this also in Menachah, it's like this. Amr of Yehuda, Hayat Ben Buchri B'Yavne, Ben Buchri, who was a Kohen, gave Eidos in Yavne, in front of the Chachamim, Kol Kohen, Sheshoikel, Enei Choyte. Any Kohen who gives Master Shekel is not committing an Aveira by doing that. In other words, the point is, you would think, given that, as Ben Buchri argues, Kohenim are potter from Master Shekel, so you would think if he's giving Master Shekel, then maybe he's doing something wrong. We're going to get to that in a second. You would think, therefore, that if he gives Master Shekel, it's a problem, because now you have the Korbanos HaTzibur are being brought from private funds. So he's saying, no, don't worry about it, it's allowed, because when they give it to the Tzibur, they're giving it over completely to the Tzibur. They're not considering it their own money anymore. On the load of Yechon Ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai says to Ben Buchri, you have it wrong. Loikain, Ella, the way that they are chayev, and in fact, the way you're saying it is backwards. Not kol koyin sheshoikol, ene choyte, any koyin gives max a shekel, is not committing an avera, but the other way around. Kol koyin sheene shoikol, choyte. Any koyin who does not give max a shekel is committing an avera. Exactly the opposite. Right. Ella, so continues Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, so where are you, Ben Buchri, get this idea from, that the Kohenim don't have to give Master Shekel, Sha'Kohenim Doshin Mikra Zela Atzmon, the Kohenim Doshin the following Pasuk for their benefit, in other words, even though it's not correct off the Alacha, but they claim on the basis of the following Pasuk that they shouldn't have to give Master Shekel. The Pasuk says, V'chol Minchas Kohen Kolol Tia Loise Ochol, any Mincha brought by a Kohen has to be completely burnt on a Mizbeach, it cannot be eaten. So the Koyanim argue, Hoyo the Omer Shea Lechem, Belechem, Apartim Shalonohain. Well, if we give Master Shekel, and the Omer is a Koyan Mincha, which is eaten by the Koyanim, the Shea Lechem is a Koyan Mincha, which is eaten by the Koyanim, and the Lechem upon him. So if there are, if they partially come from funds of Koyanim, Heachem Nechalim, how would they be able to be eaten? So they're saying, okay, if a Koyan wants to give Master Shekel, fine, he's giving it over yoppa to the Tzibur, but he shouldn't be required to, because if the Koyanim are required to, they don't necessarily, they're still thinking of it as their Master Shekel, therefore it comes out, you have a Mincha that belongs partially to Koyanim, and is being eaten against the
Master Shekel with the Mincha?
No, of course not. You give Master Shekel during Adar, but that money is used to buy the barley for the Omer and the wheat for the Shelech and the Malach and the Honim. So therefore, the argument of Ben Buchri and his fellow Koyanim is that that Koyanim, therefore, should be potter from Master Shekel.
Yes, because the money goes to them in
any. No, not because the money goes to them in any case. Because the money that they're giving is going to end up being used for menachos that are eaten. And how can a mincha... Doesn't matter whether it's by them or not. The point is, it's being eaten, whereas the Torah tells us a mincha brought by Koyanim is not supposed to be eaten. It's supposed to be completely burnt. So therefore, the argument is, Koyanim shouldn't be required to give Master Shekel. Because if they are required to give Master Shekel, then you're going to have a percentage of the money that went to buying the Shtei Lechem or the Lechem upon him or whatever is going to be from Koyanim, and then you're going to have a Mincha of Koyanim that's eaten, which goes against the Pasuk. So now, the fact of the matter is, it's not like that because minchas koyan refers to when a koyan directly gives money or flour or whatever and brings a mincha. We're not talking about when he's chipping in together with the rest of the tzibur. That's not considered minchas koyan.
If he's own money in separate.
If a koyan takes his own money and uses it to buy mincha and then brings it as a korban, then yeah, the whole thing is wrong. Tosfos also mentions And Tosfos mentions Rashi talks about also the Yerushalmi actually in Shkolim also talks about another way of looking at the machloikas is when the pasuk says ze yitznu kol ha'over al apkudim. What does that mean? Kol ha'over al apkudim doesn't mean everybody who passed through to be counted but with the rest of the Jewish people. In that case, Kohen and Levim should be possible. They were counted separately. Or does it kol yeah they're in Parshas Bamidbar, they're counted separately, right? Or does it mean they didn't do that yet? Or does it mean kol over means everybody who passed through the Yamsuf, in which case it includes the Kohen and Levim as well. Tosfos also points out over here, and actually Rashi mentioned
before that,
The point is, Aaron was there. New Aaron and his son were there. Fine, but they're there. They're going to be Kohen. And whatever. The point is, they passed through the Yam Tov like everybody else. Also, the word Zeh in the Pesach means 12. Is the Gematria of 12, so it includes the Levim as well. But whatever. The point is, Rabbi Yochanan Zakeh is saying, the fact is, you Kohenim are darshining on the basis of this idea about Minchas Kohen, that you shouldn't have to give Matzah Shekel. That's wrong. So therefore, the point is, So before we get to how that relates to our Mishnah, let's just explain a second. The question is, well, Ben Bukhri Nami. So the question is, of course, but according to Ben Bukhri's opinion, given that, how does it work then? How does it work that he's saying, Machatchila, they don't have to give. But if they gave, then there's no problem with it. How does that work? Given the Machatchila, they must have you, see, if the Kohenim are not obligated to bring Master Shekel in the first place, he might be Nami Chotehu. Then according to his logic, it should be considered they're doing an Aveira if they bring it. Because they're causing Cholim to be brought into the Azara. Because they're giving Master Shekel, and it's not they're not supposed to be giving it. So it would be the equivalent of, let's say, of a Goy giving Master Shekel, where it's not a valid Master Shekel, and then it comes out that Cholim is coming into the Azara. The answer is, Ben Bukhri would hold the Maisi Lahu Masal of Sibu. The answer is, he would say yes, but they can bring it if they want to. And if they do that, then they have to be careful that they're fully giving it over to the Sibu. That they're not planning, they're not thinking of it as their own money anymore. So now that we have that, so therefore, when we consider Kulin, in other words, it would be the equivalent of anybody else who's not high of giving Master Shekel. Women are not high of Master Shekel either, but if they want to give, then it's accepted. Same idea, as long as they're Moisir, the Sibu, Yafa Yafa. So Kayan, according to Ben Bukhri, would do the same thing. Okay, so now the point is, now that we understand Ben Bukhri's opinion, so now, you would think like this, why should Kohenim not be subject to the dinim of Erechim? Since the Pasuk says that every Erech is measured in Shekel HaKodesh, then you would think we're making a hekesh between Erech and Shekel, called the Isei B'Shkolim Isei B'Erechim. Only somebody who is obligated in a Shekel, Maksa Shekel that is obligated in Erechim. Bahani Kohenim Hovalesnu B'Shkolim. According to Ben Bukhri, Kohenim are not chayev in shkolim, so less new American. You would think they shouldn't be chayev in American. Kamash Malon, that is why the Mishnah tells us, even according to Ben Bukhri, they're chayev. On the basis of, the Gemara doesn't give the basis for it, but Rashi's, because that's not a hekesh. The Pasuk is not telling us, b'chol elka chayev b'shekel ha-kodesh, in order to, that's actually the Gemara is going to ask. Amalei Abaya. So Abaya asks Rabbah, what do you mean? That we would have thought to make that hekesh, and then the Braita is telling us that not. We have a different purpose that we're using those words for. When it says v'chol erkecha yiyeh b'shek l'kodesh, v'chol erchen sh'atam marich lo yiyeh kotzin yisela. We're going to learn in the second parak, at the beginning of the second parak, that it means that any erech that you declare is never less than a sela. Now, in the table of erchen in Parashat v'chol koyfai, the minimum amount is 3 sloyim. For a girl between, so what do we mean by Stella? For a girl between 1 month and 5 years old, the amount is 3 sloyim. What do we mean here, Stella? We're going to learn in the second parak, and in the fourth parak, we're going to talk about the concept of hesed yad, which is if a person pledges an erech to the Bis Mikdash, and then it turns out they can't afford the full amount, then the gizbarim of the Bis Mikdash go and figure out how much is the property that they own worth, and they take that property, they leave them certain basic items, as we'll talk about in the fourth parak. And then the rest of it goes to Hekdesh. As long as that amount that they have is worth at least a seller, then they're potter from the rest of their eretz. So a person were to say, let's say, Erki Olai, and he's a male between 20 and 60, and he owes 50. No, if he's a male between 20 and 60, it's 50 seller. But fine, let's say, for example, fine, he said an erech of my daughter, let's say, who's between a month and 5 years old. He should be giving 3 sloyim, but he can't afford it. So the gizbarim will come. They find that all he has, let's say, is 1 seller. Fine, they take that 1 seller from him, and he's potter from the rest. That's called hesed yad. So that's what it means. Only if he can't afford it, right? And the point of it is, he's never chayev in the rest, even if later on he becomes rich. If the next week he wins the lottery, he still doesn't have to pay the remaining 2 sloyim or 49 or whatever. That's called hesed yad. Yeah, so we're going to talk about the details of it in the second and the fourth parak. So the point is, that's what we learn that from this passage. It says v'chol erech chayev b'shekel hakodesh, that the minimum amount for an erech is 1 shekel. So how would even Ben Bukhri, how would he think to learn from it that Kohenim should be potter from Erechim altogether? Elo, Amar Abaya Itzris. So no, Abaya says there's a different reason why our Mishnah has to say that Kohenim and Levim are chayev and Master Shekel, are subject to Erechim. Hoyuchtiv, because you have a different pasuk like this. Uf duyav men chodesh tifteh, the erkecha, the pasuk says, the ones who have to be redeemed, or to be, you should redeem from a month and older, the erkecha according to your value, which is pidyon haben, that we learned about in Min Bechoros. So, called the isse the pidyon haben, isse the erkin, so you would argue only those who are chayev in pidyon haben are chayev in erkin, vahani koyinim hoyu velasnum pidyon haben, koyinim, and levim for that matter, are parted from pidyon haben. So therefore, you would think less new be'erchin, maybe they're part of be'erchin, kamash malon, that is the chiddush of our Mishnah, that nevertheless they're chayim. So according to that, it's not, so according to that, it has nothing to do with Ben Bukhri anymore. Now, our Mishnah, when it says koyinim, can be even according to the chachamim, that koyinim are chayim, master shekel, because we wouldn't have thought to learn it from master shekel, we'd have thought to learn it from pidyon haben. So now we're saying that we don't. The fact is, we don't do that hekish, we don't say that be'erchah means that there's a connection between pidyon haben and erchin. Koyinim levim a pasuk from pidyon haben, but erchin they are chayim. Okay. Amar le'Rava, however, Rava asked Abaya, how can you say that when you have the word be'erchah in a pasuk that you would argue that it means that only those who are chayim and erchin, that only those who are chayim in that particular mitzvah are chayim and erchin? What about elamei ata gabe el osham? What about when the pasuk describes the person has to bring a ram for an osham in a couple of cases? One of them, you have asham zelos, you have asham me'ilos. So, the pasuk says that Hashem Yavi Lashem, this specific one actually is talking about Gezel, where a person stole or misappropriated money from somebody else or whatever, swore falsely about it, now he wants to do tshuva. So it says he should bring his Oshem to Hashem, Ayol Tomim Min Atzoin, an unblemished ram from the sheep, the Erkecha, according to your value, it has to be worth at least two Sloim. He even argue because it says be'erchah hachinami to call the isse be'erchin isse be'el ha'asham. So what are you going to say? Only somebody who's subject to erchin is subject to the mitzvah of bringing an el ha'asham. You would argue therefore tumtum v'androgynous to lesnu be'erchin lesnu be'el ha'asham. Are you going to say then that a tumtum and androgynous who are not subject to erchin, because we said in our Mishnah that erchin only apply to definite males or definite females, you're going to say they're parted from el ha'asham? If a tumtum or androgynous swears false, the young Gezel or whatever, they have to bring carbon just like anybody else. Yeah. So we obviously are not making such a limud from be'erchah. Now the point is, I mean, obviously, Achronim point out. I mean, the we're not saying over here that they are. We're not saying over here that in the end the Kohenim are potter from erchin because they're potter from pidyon haben. We're saying that we would have thought they are. So the Gemara could have answered that we would have thought they're potter, but they're not. However, the point is one point is fine. But we should have had a braisa saying explicitly that a tumtum and androgynous are chayav and elal hashem. Or at least, you know, we don't have any place where it suggests to the contrary that they might not. So therefore, if you're going to learn it that way, we should have at least had to have something to tell us that it's not like that.
But you don't.
So the fact is, so therefore, in other words, there's no reason to think that just because it says be'erkha by a particular mitzvah, that anybody, that there's a connection between it and erkhin. So the same way as we don't say there's any connection between Ela Osham and erkhin as far as tumtum and androgynous, or tumtum and androgynous are potter from erkhin, but they're chayiv and Ela Osham. The same way, why should we say that because Koyinim are potter from Pidyon haben, they should be potter from Erchin? So what's the point of our Mishnah then? Ela Amar Rava b'Tamei Rav Ashi. So rather Rava or some say Rav Ashi gives a different answer. If still we need our Mishnah to be telling us that Koyinim are chayiv and Erchin. Hoyuchtiv, because the pasuk says that if a poor person pledges an erech, and then as we said, there's going to be hesed yad, where they have to figure out how much assets he has to figure out how much he has to pay hesed. And the pasuk says, "Behem midoy lifnei akoyin," he should stand him up in front of the koyin. So therefore, you would argue that means that only a Yisrael or a Levi is chayiv in it, because you would argue below koyin lifnei koyin. You would argue that the pasuk is implying that only a Yisrael or a Levi is chayiv because they can be standing in front of a koyin. You would argue maybe the Torah is telling us that a Kohen doesn't have to stand in front of another Kohen. Kamash Malon, that he does. And that, yes, the same dinim of Erchin apply to Kohenim as to everybody else. And yes, if a Kohen pledges an Erech and he can't afford it, yes, he's going to have to go to another Kohen. The other Kohen is going to have to evaluate how much money he has and what he can afford. If he wants to be Matu Neder, fine, it can be Matu Neder, but we're talking about otherwise. Fine, so that takes care of why the Mishnah needs to tell us that Kohenim, and once it says Kohenim, then also Levim and Israelim, are able to pledge an Erech. Okay. What about Ne'erochin? Why does it have to say that everybody is Ne'erochin? Hakol Ne'erochin, everybody can be the subject of an Erech, last, so what does that come to include? So we mentioned it briefly in the Gemara before. Now we're going to expand on it. That we said that it comes to include a menuvel, somebody who's ugly or disgusting, umukeshchin, or somebody who is afflicted with shchin, boils.
No.
As you asked me that the other day, no, it's not necessarily farah, some kind of disfiguring skin, some kind of boils or some other kind of contagious skin disease, where no, even that we said such a person wouldn't have dumming because nobody would want to buy them as a slave, but nevertheless they still have an ailment. So now we mentioned that before, but now we have to say menahani mili. Where do we get that concept from? Where indeed do we know that a menuvel or mukeshchin has an ailment? So the Tanan Rabbanan, they're like this. We learn in a Braita. The pasuk says be'erkecha. The pasuk says in your erech. That means lahavi erech sasum. That comes to include an erech sasum. Erech sasum literally means a closed up erech. We're going to explain on Amud Beis what that means. Davar acher, another explanation, be'erkecha means erech kuloi hu noisin. It means when a person pledges an erech, he has to give the erech of the entire of the entire person v'loy erech evarim. There's no such thing as an erech of individual limbs. So for example, if a person were to say, I pledge the erech of my hand, it doesn't mean anything. If he says, Dmei Yodai, then his hand has a value, and we're going to learn later on in the Masechta how you evaluate. If he uses the expression dummy, right, then he uses erech. But if he uses erech, then there's no such thing as an erech, there's no such thing as an erech of a hand, right? Continues the Braise, in that case, you would think to also exclude, what if he mentions a vital organ? What if he says, for example, the erech of my head? So then, how do we know that he's still chayev? Tamad loymar, nefashos. Therefore, the pasuk says, be'erkecha nefashos. Nefashos means lives, so therefore it means something that the life depends on. So if a person says, I pledge the erech of my head, then he's chayev, and the erech is the whole body.
The erech is my head, is
the neshama? No, the point is that the neshama being in a person depends on there being a head attached to their body, right?
And the body attached to
that. Fine, that's the point. In other words, so if he says the erech of my head, that's the equivalent of saying the erech of all of me, which means it's full erech. Same thing if he were to say, for example, the erech of my lungs or my heart or my liver or whatever. Okay. First we're going to quote the Braise in full, then we're going to start analyzing it on the base. Next. So therefore, Tramadog and nefashos v'loy hames. So also, we learn from the word nefashos is that it means not a dead person. That a dead person does not have an erech. So if a person were to say, I pledge the erech. No, it's not so obvious. For one thing, Tosfos says, look, you have a menuvel and a mukeshchin. They have no domim and they have an erech. Okay, fine. The point is, we wouldn't have known it if not for the word nefashos.
Would be very strong.
Okay. Nobody's going to want to buy. Okay, but the point is, nobody's going to want to buy them. They have no monetary value, and yet they have an erech. He would argue, fine, a mess has no monetary value either, because he's also b'hana, but maybe he has an erech. No, therefore, the positive nefashos, meaning that not. So Talmud Lomim, nefashos means nefashos lemes. Continues the bright. So there is no such thing as an erech for a mess. Otsias a mess, or otsias a goisis, continues the braise. So you would think then we should only exclude a mess. We should not exclude a goisis, somebody who is, the goisis literally means like there's like a rattling around the back of their throat. In English also they call it the death rattle, like they're breathing their final breath. So you would think maybe such a person has an erech, after all they're still alive. No, Talmud Lomar v'hamid v'herech. But you have another pasuk later on that says he has to, in the case of a poor person who can't afford the full erech, the pasuk is v'hamid, they have to stand him up in front of the kohen, v'herech, and the kohen has to evaluate him. Which means, kol sheyeshne b'hamada, only somebody who's capable of being stood up in front of the kohen, yeshne b'haracha, only such a person is there a concept of an erech. V'chol she'ene b'hamada, if he can't be stood up in front of the kohen, namely a goses, is not capable of standing anymore. And not only is he not capable of standing, but actually, even if he wasn't a goses yet, let's say he was a shivra, fine, he's in bed. A shivra is not necessarily going to be able to stand. But the difference is, people could pick him up and standing in front of the kohen. As opposed to a goses, the halacha is actually, you're not allowed to touch a goses. Because like his life is literally hanging on by a thread, and touching him may kill him. Yeah. So therefore, goyses you're actually not allowed to touch.
Unless you're
going to do something that's going to. Yeah, of course. I'm not talking medical intervention. But yeah. But the point is, therefore, so anybody who can't be stood up, like a goyses, ain't a baharocha. Then there's no din of haracha for them. So that's where we learn that the goyses has no answer. See, otherwise, you would have thought, yeah, otherwise he would have been in the bushes. He's still alive. If a person kills him, he's still over on the issue of Lois. Okay. Next. Dover
Amos.
If he kills a ghost, he's not Chayv Mitzvah for it. But he's not Chayv Mitzvah for it. But nevertheless, maybe I don't know, maybe Malchus, but whatever. The point is, he's still over on Lois. Fine. Dover Achon, actually the truth is maybe it's not so simple. There's a difference between ghosts be the Adam and ghosts be the Shemayim. We learned about it in the Sanhedrin. Let's not get into that. The point is, whatever. Fine. Dover Achon, this, by the way, this is relevant nowadays to the whole question of pulling the plug. Dover Achon, Nefoshos, another meaning of the word Nefoshos in the Pasuk is, Ainli Ela Echon Meher. Yeah, you're not allowed to. Dover Achon, Nefoshos, Ainli Ela Echon Meher Echon. If you only had so far, the words in the pasuk that you have a mitzvah that you pledge an erech to pay it, you would think that only applies if one person says an erech of one person. So I say I pledge my own erech, or I say I pledge your erech, or whatever.
You can't say you pay someone else's erech?
Yeah, I can pledge your erech, for example, and then I'd be chayev in your erech. So we'd look it up, and we'd find you're between 20 and 60, and therefore it's 50 shkalim. Once you turn 60, then it drops down to 15 shkalim. Okay. So, echad sheherech mea minayin, how do we know that the same rules apply if one person pledges the erech of 100 people? So therefore, talmud lomar nefoshos, that's why it says nefoshos in the plural, meaning it doesn't matter even if one person pledges many people there.
Well, he's still chayav.
He's chayav to pay him. Yeah.
Why would it be different?
Because you would think that maybe it's only a one-on-one thing.
Why?
Well, you would think maybe that each person has their own individual erech, and if you say an erech of a bunch of people, then maybe it doesn't mean anything, but no, it means the erech of each one individually. There are actually some of the Mefarshim who understand that the din actually would be, again, how would we apply hesed yad over there? So one argument is, we would consider it, let's say he pledges the erech of 100 different people, one way of what some of the Achronim talk about, maybe we would consider it as the equivalent of 100 different erechim, which means if hesed yad comes into play, then we would need one selah for each one. On the other hand, another way of looking at it is maybe not. Maybe we would consider it as one big erech, and therefore hesed yad. We mean only one selah for all of them. Yeah, maybe. All right. Anyway, davar achar, another explanation from the word nefoshes. If you only have the words in the pasuk, it starts off ish ish ki yachli neder. So you would think, therefore, it applies only to a man who pledges an erech, whether the erech is of a man or a woman. Isha shaharicha ish. How do we know if a woman pledges an erech of a man, or isha shaharicha isha, or if a woman pledges an erech of a woman, whether herself or somebody else? Minayin. Yeah, that's how minayin. How do we know that it's still a valid erech? Tamad lama nefashos. Therefore, it says nefashos in the plural, meaning any person, any yid at least, is able to pledge an erech. That we're going to ask. First, we'll bring the whole bright, but then we're going to analyze and talk about how we're using the word nefashos for so many different dinim. We're going to get to that. Next, Dover Acher, another explanation, Nefoshes L'Rabbis Menuvel Mokeshchin. Another reason, and this is another explanation, and this is why we bring the Braisa, is the word Nefoshes includes a Menuvel and a Mokeshchin, that they still have an Erech. Sheyochol Neder Be'erkecha, because, and the reason why we need to say that, because otherwise you would have thought, since the Pasuk uses the expression Neder Be'erkecha, a Neder according to you Erech, which you would think, kol sheyeshne b'damim yeshne b'erechin, only somebody who has damim, who has a monetary value in the market, is considered to have an erech. B'chol she'ene b'damim ene b'erechin, anybody who doesn't have damim, a menuvel or mokeshchin, has no damim, because nobody's going to bother buying them. You would think, ene b'erechin, maybe they don't have an erech either. Tamad lema nefashes, therefore the Pasuk mentions nefashes, so yes, a menuvel or mokeshchin still has an erech.
Only a goites or a
mess. Okay. Next. The pasuk continues, v'hoya erkecha.
If you said that a goites or a mess is the only one who doesn't, why would you think that Manuval...
We didn't say they were the only ones. We said, well, now that we come out at the end, we say they're the only ones. But we had to learn that. We had to learn mess from the word nefashos. We had to learn goites from behem and beherich. So we would have thought that. Fine, but we would have thought that the general rule is anybody who has no domim has no erchim. So now we know that it's not like that. Okay. Next. The pasuk continues, Vahoya erkecha, your erech should be, and the word Vahoya is an extra word. So it means, the pasuk is Vahoya erkecha. If you pledge an erech, then Vahoya erkecha, then the erech should be such and such. So the rabbis tumtum v'androgynous l'domin. That comes to include that a tumtum and androgynous, even though they don't have an erech, they do have domin. Now, why do we have to say that? Shiyachol, neder be'erucha, because again, you would think to compare neder and erucha, kol sheyesh ne be'erucha and yesh ne be'damim, you would argue that the other way around, anybody who has an erech has damim as well, v'chol she'ein be'erucha and ein be'damim, anybody who has no erech, and a tumtum and androgynous have no erech, because that applies only to a zocher or a nekeva, and a tumtum and androgynous are neither a zocher nor a nekeva, yeah. So therefore, so you would argue ein be'damim, maybe the concept of damim doesn't apply to them either, tamabim v'hoya erucha. Therefore, the pasuk is v'hoya erkocha to include them as well.
How do we know that it includes them?
Because once it says v'hoya, we have a ribui, then we learn from Torah Shabbat Peh that the ribui is on there.
From the ribui
v'hoya? From the ribui v'hoya, yeah. Next. Hazachar. Next, the pasuk says the erech of a man, male, means zachar, but like tumtum v'androgynous. Means specifically, if it's a zachar, not a tumtum, not an androgynous. Now, you would think, yachol lo yu v'erech ish. So you could argue maybe like this. Maybe you could, we learned this actually in Bechoris. We had a long story on this topic. So you would think that maybe if Tumtum and Androgynous do not have an Erech of a man, because in other words, so you have, let's say, a Tumtum between 20 and 60 years old, where if a man's Erech at that age is 50 shekel, a woman's at that age is 30 shekel, so you would argue, okay, Tumtum and Androgynous, if I pledge the Erech of that Tumtum or that Androgynous, you would argue, okay, you can't make me responsible to pay 50 sela, because maybe he's not a Zocher. You would argue though at least I should be obligated in the erech of a woman, because one way or the other, No, therefore the pasuk mentions your erech should be for a male, and if she's a female, implying zocher vaday nekeva vadois, v'loy tumtum v'androgynous, so only it has to be a definite male, a definite female, no tumtum, no androgynous. They're completely exempted, they have no erech. Actually, Now we actually learned in Bechoras about this. We actually learned where the Gemara wanted to say over there, if one's a chista at least, that maybe you should take out the word tumtum over here, because maybe a tumtum is maybe a tumtum after all is maybe is a tumtum. We could argue an androgynous, fine. You could argue is very with an afra, it's considered a third gender, but a tumtum you could argue is some under there is either a male or a female. Yes, we had a long discussion about that over there, whether in fact, yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, so thus far the Braisa, now let's start analyzing it. Omar be'erkecha l'rabis erech sosum. We started off by saying that the word be'erkecha means an erech sosum, an unspecified erech. So my erech sosum, what do we mean by an erech sosum? So like this, Titania, we learn another Braisa. Ha'omer erech sosum olai, or stam, or whatever. If a person says an erech on me, so, for example, now you can have the typical way as a person would say, erki alai, my own erech is an obligation on me, or erech ploini alai. In this case, let's say he just says, harei alai erech, without specifying which erech. So then, noisin kapoch.
That's not considered erech sosum.
That is erech sosum.
When he says just erech?
Right. Noisin kapoch shiva erechin. So then he's obligated to give the minimum erech in the list over there. V'chama pochas shiva erechin shloisha shkolim. What's the minimum? It's 3 shkolim, because that's the erech for a girl between a month and 5 years. That's the smallest value in the table over there. So therefore, that's what we understand. In other words, without the word be'erkecha, we would have thought that if a person says harei alai erech, it's meaningless. No, we're saying harei alai erech means he's chayev in 3 shkolim. So the question is, why dafka shiv eim chamishim? Maybe just the other way around. Maybe we should say it means he's pledging the maximum erech, which is 50. The answer is never mind that. He said harei alai erech without specifying whose erech. So why are we saying that he only has to give the minimum 5 erech? Maybe he should have to give the maximum 5 erech, which is 50. He didn't say the minimum either. Okay, the point is, so the answer is tafasta merubalo tafasta, as the famous expression goes, if you grab a lot, you haven't grabbed anything, tafasta more tafasta, if you grab a little bit, then you have grabbed. In other words, as the Gemara always, whenever the Gemara uses that expression, it means in other words like this. We're arguing over here. This person said harei alai erech. So he's chayev in some erech. If you were to argue that he's chayev in 50, let's say, you could say, well, where are you getting 50 from? Maybe less. And it's the same thing if you said...
Whatever.
He just said harei alai erech without specifying whose erech. So you're going to make him 50. He's going to say, where are you getting that I should have to pay 50? Maybe I actually meant 30 for a woman that age. Maybe I meant 20 for a younger girl, et cetera, et cetera. Once we get down to 3, you can't possibly say that he meant less than that because 3 is a minimum. So that's what it means. And there's no erech, the minimum size erech on the table is 3. So therefore, in other words,
it's for a young girl
between a month and 5 years old. Yeah. So like this, tafasta more, tafasta, when you grab a hold of the smallest amount, you've grabbed a hold of it, because there's no way to dislodge it. There's no way to say he meant less than that, because there is no less than that. Okay. So the question is, the aim of shekel. Okay. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that. I think it's more, actually. No, you're not supposed to say harei elai erech. You're not supposed to pledge an erech nowadays, because who would you give it to? We don't have a bet mikdash. No. Erech can go specifically to Ekdash. No, we're going to talk about that at the end of the chapter. It's more about the same. Okay, fine. So the question is, the aim of shekel. Maybe when this person says harei elai erech, we should only have to make them give a shekel. Dichtiv, as we have the pasuk we quoted before, l'chol erech ha'yir b'shekel ha'chodesh. Every erech is in a shekel, rather than three. Well, a shekel is a sela, but whatever. One instead of three. Yeah. The answer is hahu behetzig yado dichtiv. Okay, but that pasuk is talking only about hetzig yad, only about the special case where the person can't afford the full erech, and therefore he pays less. But the ordinary case of erech is, the actual concept of erech is a minimum of three shkolim, three shkolim. If the person can't afford it, then you have the special din of hetzig yad. Okay, fine. Sort of. Okay, so fine. So the question is like this. If you're telling me that logically, based on tefasta merubaloi, tefasta mort, tefasta, that if he says harei alai erech, he's obligated in three sloyim, the elech krol amali. Why do we need the pasuk? The erech chal to tell us that. We could have figured that out logically.
You don't need a
pasuk to tell us that. The answer is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avuah, loyma she'enin nidin behesig yad. Yes, the chiddush of the pasuk is that in this case, hesig yad does not apply. If he were to say, for example, so he has there's a girl there between 30 days and 5 years old, and he says harei alai erka, then yeah, hesed yad would apply. He can't afford to be sloyim. He can pay a minimum of a sela and he's good. But if he were to say harei alai erech, then Rav Nachman is saying he would have to pay the full three. And if he can't afford it, fine. It means he owes hekdesh. It means he'll pay whatever he can now, and later on he owes hekdesh. If he ever wins the lottery, he's gonna have to pay up. Yeah. Okay. So that would be the point of the pasuk. My timer. Kimafana Shadami. Why is that? Because when he says harei alai erech, and he knows the minimum size erech is three sloyim, it amounts to saying, I pledge three sloyim to the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, that's one version. Ikadamri, another version is the other way around. Amar Rav Nachman bar Amar Rav Avuah, nidon behesed yad. You should know, even this person who says harei alai erech, the concept of hesed yad applies to him. So the question is, Pshita, wouldn't that be obvious? Why should it be different than any other erech? The answer is, Ma'u detema kim farish dummy. Because you would think that it's the equivalent of saying explicitly, as we said in the first question. Nidin behesed yad means that the concept of hesed yad applies. If we can't afford three, then we make him pay a minimum of one. And as long as he can pay the one, he falters from the rest. So the point is, according to the second version, even when he says erech alai, So you would think, Ma'ud Tema, from the Farish Dummy, you would think that it's the equivalent of saying explicitly, I'm going to give three, Kamash Malon, according to the second version, that is the Chiddush of the Pasuk, that he's not. That it is as if he said the Erech of a person. Now, according to the... Because that's what it is. That's the point. In other words. Now, according to the first version, Rashi says like this. When a person says Erech Yolai, or Erech Pleni Yolai, Rashi says, Not everybody knows how much he's actually pledged, because not everybody knows how old he is. As opposed to when he says harei alai erech in the first lashon, you could argue, given that he said harei alai erech and didn't attach it to any particular person, so we know it means the minimum value. Therefore, it should be the equivalent of him actually saying, in so many words, I pledge three sloyim.
Why can't we say we know he's rich? It's 50.
No, it doesn't work that way. If he wants to give 50, fine. But tefasta merubah lo tefasta. He has the right to say, where are you getting that? I should have given 50. Okay. Anyway, that's Rashi's explanation why in the first Lashon we would say that he's chayev in three and that hesed yad doesn't even apply, because hesed yad, Rashi learns, can only apply where the amount that he pledged is not necessarily known by everybody, because not everybody knows his age, as opposed to over here, it's obvious that he meant to employ him, and therefore hesed yad shouldn't apply. Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says, I mean, that doesn't really work so well. Okay, let's say, for example, he says Erech Yolai. Okay, but everybody knows that he's not a month old. Everybody knows he's over 5 years old. At least he should be obligated in the Erech of a person, of a man between 5 and 20, let's say. But Tosfos just says, no, it's a Xeris HaKosov, the concept of Hesed Yad. Even though you could argue, yes, everybody knows his age, maybe. Nevertheless, the Torah gives the guy a break and gives him hesed yad. But according to the first Lashon, you could argue, again, if he says Harei Alei Erech, the point would be that saying Harei Alei Erech amounts to explicitly saying three Slayim. In the second Lashon, we're saying no. The second Lashon was that even then, Hesed Yad applied. Even though he said Harei Alei Erech, which amounts to saying three Slayim, nevertheless, it's not like he explicitly said three Slayim. It's still the equivalent of any other Erech. That's the point of the word Be'erzecha, and therefore we only make, therefore Hesed Yad applies, and if he can only afford one seller, then he gives only one seller, and he's parted from the rest. And the Rambam, in fact, passed him that way, because it's usual in the Gemara, when we have the second Lashon, which is the second Lashon, that, so the Rambam writes like this. If the person explicitly says, for example, let's say he were to say about himself, I pledge my own Erech, 50 Sloyim, if he actually spells out the words 50 Sloyim, then there's no Hesed Yad. Then he has to give the whole 50, and if he can't, then he owes it to Hesed until he can afford it. Because then if he spelled out the words Hamishim Sloyim, or whatever the amount is, then that's the, then
everybody agrees.
Well, the Rambam writes that. I mean, so the Radbaz says, the Rambam, it doesn't say explicitly in the Gemara, but the Rambam derives it from our discussion over here.
But
the focus is, if he said, so like this, okay, we have three possible cases. One is where he said Erki Olai, where he says Erki Olai, so then he owes 50, but Hesed Yad applies, and if he can only afford one, he gives one, he's purchasing from the rest. Second would be a chiddush of the Rambam, inferred from our Gemara over here, that if he says Erki Olai Hamishim Sloyim, then he owes the full 50 and there's no Hesed Yad. If he can't afford the whole thing, he owes it later on, the Hekdish. The third possibility, which is what we're discussing here in the Gemara, would be if he says Erech Olai. So according to the first Lashon, saying Erech Olai is the equivalent of saying three Sloyim, and therefore he's chayav in three Sloyim and there's no Hesed Yad. And according to the second Lashon, which is how the Rambam passed in the Halacha, Erech Olai is the equivalent of just saying the Erech of a girl is on me. Meaning, therefore, he owes three, but Hesed Yad applies, and if he can only afford one, then he pays only one. Gavracha, the Braise said, continued, another explanation, the Erkecha, the word Be'erkecha, we said, means Erech Kulei Hu Noisin, Vein and Noisin Erech Dimei Barim. We said Be'erkecha means that there's only an Erech for a complete person, not for individual limbs. So the question is, you just said that the word Be'erkecha is teaching us about this concept of Erech Stam, how you're reusing it for another Drasha. The answer is, Kori Be'erech Be'erkecha. Okay, but the pasuk didn't have to say the word at all. Then it could have just said the word Erech, and instead it said Be'erkecha. Therefore, we could douse in two things from it. One from the word Erech, and the other from the fact that it didn't say Erech, that it said Be'erkecha. So from one of them we can douse in that, from one of them we can douse in that only a complete person has an Erech, and from the other one we can learn that the concept of Erech Stam that we just said. The whole word was unnecessary in the pasuk. The pasuk didn't have to say anything at all, and it said, and not only it says erech, but it says de'erkecha. So therefore, we can learn two different things from the same word. One that it has to be a complete person, and the other that there's the concept of erech stam that we just said. If he says erech stam, then he owes two. Okay. So we'll stop over here, and we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with the continuation of the Braisa, with the continuing analyzing the Braisa.